Okay, I'm gonna fuck this one up. Three.
We know.
God damn it. Three, two, one. Welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer's Hammers. Hammer it with my... Fuck, did it again.
There it is. It's a tough one.
It's tough.
Yeah. You're just going to move on to full limerick.
Yeah, soon. Basically. Okay. Three, two, one.
The Yak Babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer's Hammers. Hammer it with Spillane's Hammer's Hammer. My name's Aaron. I'm here with my personal pal, Dave.
Well done.
Rick.
I don't understand it, but it is well done, I suppose.
Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer. It was like a... So Mickey Spillane created the character Mike Hammer, like a noir detective character, right?
Gotcha.
And there's a TV show in the 70s called Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer. So this story is Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer's Hammer. So it's a store owned by Mike Hammer, who was created by Mickey Spillane. And the slogan is, Hammer it with Spillane's Hammer's Hammers.
Got it now.
So dumb.
It's not funny. It's just stupid.
Emo Phillips would love it.
Sure. That was my target audience. And of course, we have Old Irish Nico calling in from Old Ireland.
Hello.
Hello. Wow, it's January as we're recording this. It's our first record of the new year since our Christmas extravaganza. And it's time to check in and see what we're reading. This is our usual feature on the show. I want to see what's on my personal pal's nightstands, what they're reading, what they're checking in with. Let's start with Dave.
Since July, I've read only one book that wasn't for the podcast, so You're kind of keeping me afloat.
Nice. That's our job.
That's your job. You know, and I guess speaking of floating, I decided in November to pick a book that I could read during my morning pooping sessions. Jesus.
Speaking of floating, God damn it.
It's nice when those things come together. So, you know, because I was pissed, I wasn't reading at all, but I really had not had the time. So I wanted to go with something short, something familiar, and something kind of wintry.
Unlike your shits, which are long, unfamiliar, and something.
And very swampy, summery.
Yeah. Summery. Oh, man.
So I went with Last Night at the Lobster, because it kind of hits all of those, you know, buttons. And it's something I didn't really have to think too much about, because I know the story so well.
I think you mean Yakky Award winner, Last Night at the Lobster.
That's true.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Celebrated.
Yeah. You know, we talked about it so much, including an entire episode. So, and it took me weeks. It took me more than a month. I think I finished right after Christmas. But like it always does, it hit the spot. And at least I can say I read a book between July and the end of the year that wasn't for the podcast. So mission accomplished.
Nice.
Did you keep track of how many poops it took you to read the book?
No, but
just
I did.
One.
I read almost daily.
Just one brown thumbprint every day.
God. Damn it.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
You know, and I would like, if I had tacos the night before, I'd have more time to read. No, I didn't keep track. But yeah, I mean, it took me a very long time, even though that's a short book, maybe 160 pages. Like, it's a novella. But
that's also kind of wondering because,
you know, I was reading like 3 pages a day.
Right.
Depending on how often I was in there. Three to six to nine pages a day.
It's about like 3 hour read, maybe 3.5, 4, something like that. It's pretty short.
Yeah.
So it's like, it'd be interesting because you could divide it literally into, well, how many times did it shit and read this? And like, what did it add up to? What does that mean for my average shit? There's a really good stat, like data analysis project here. Like,
really good.
Yeah.
Listeners, do this project. Go get Last Night the Lobster and read it when you go to the bathroom only and see how long it takes you. And then tell us. Give us the stats and we'll do a big report about it.
It's a 42 shit book.
That's the new scale.
That's how we're gonna define books from now on. Yeah, how many shits?
Thumbs, boners, and shits.
Thumbs up, dicks up, and also how many shits? This is the worst.
It's a lot
podcast
to keep track of.
How many? Is this your third read of that book, or
more than that? Maybe even more than fourth. Yeah, I would say fifth. But the first one that I didn't, the first time that it took me a while, more than a couple of days,
right?
For sure. So it was kind of interesting from that angle, like reading it, I guess, sequentially like that over a longer period of time.
Yeah, you could almost do I mean, you could do this with any book, I suppose, but with Lobster, it's so short. You could do sort of like a like page by page breakdown of it.
Yeah.
Or even like paragraph by paragraph if you wanted to. Poop by poop. There it is. Excellent. Good. Brick, what about you?
So somewhat ironically, I suppose, I've spent more time reading with COVID than when I was avoiding COVID. That's right.
Brick has coronavirus, everyone.
I do. Wrote that one. So concentration, not super easy, mostly because of the headaches and the fatigue. So what I did was reach for a comforting book and one that I hadn't read in a few years. So I've been reading Lolita, which, as you guys know, is my favorite book. I've read it a lot, so nothing new. But I spent just long enough away from it to really be enjoying the hell out. It's so good. And I think my COVID make-a-wish, dying wish for you guys is going to be that we do canon to canon on it.
Yeah, we'll do that for sure at some point.
Drop the gauntlet.
Wait, is it in the canon? Do kids read that?
Not necessarily the high school canon, but it stands tall in the Western canon.
It was
for
on
sure.
Our reading list. It wasn't assigned, but it was like on the list of like, here's books to read during the summer if you want to get a head start on the AP test. It was definitely on there.
In high school?
Yeah.
Man, I can't imagine a high schooler being able to read this book and understand it. I barely understood it when I was a college kid. It's so it's, the writing is maybe the best writing in English that I can think of. It's that good. But the book is so cleverly layered. It's just everything about it is complicated and skillful and purposeful that I can't imagine a 17-year-old being able to approach it and be able to peel that apart.
Yeah.
And like if you just take it at face value, it's the book that a lot of people assume it is when they don't read it for real, which is just some kind of prurient pedophile book.
Right.
When in fact it is not that at all. So I mean, it's a really rewarding read, but I can't imagine a high schooler, besides like a super precocious one, being able to pick that apart.
Yeah, totally. Now, you said comfortable, and that's a word that I do not associate with Lolita at all. Can you explain that?
It's comfortable because in the sense I meant it is I've read it.
Familiar.
Okay, familiar. Probably gotcha.
Close to 10 times, so I don't need to. I know what's coming. I know what's going. I know like where the different jokes are and stuff. So it's familiar. It's like, you know, it's mac and cheese for me. Also, it's very funny.
Mm.
I think it takes reading it once or twice to understand what's a joke and what's not, you know, like the, you know, the first time when he talks about his first wife, and then there's that, it's like, I heard from a sailor or whatever that she died in an experiment in San Francisco where they had to walk on all fours and eat like pigs or whatever. And like all these just like mean spirited, but funny shit. Right. It's funny. So it's not a feel good book for sure, but it's a comforting read. Plus the writing is just so good that like, you know, any paragraph you can find something to enjoy just from a sentence.
Right. Am I the only one of us who's not read that?
Yeah, I read it. I think twice. There's a new podcast out called Lolita Podcast. Have you listened to that, Brick?
No, I wasn't aware of it.
Jamie Loftus, I think, is the host, and she's doing like a exploration of Lolita. You should check it out. I've not listened to it, but I've heard it's good.
Yeah, I'll give it a listen.
So that seems like right up your alley.
Yep. So I just sat down the other night and I've read about half of it, so I'm going to finish it. The first half's better than the second half, but the payoff's still good enough that it's great. So.
Right. Right.
That's it.
Excellent. Nico, what about you?
Yeah, so I had a bit of an eventful couple of months. So it's late January right now. In late November, about 2 months ago, the fourth book of the Stormlight Archive came out. And longtime readers might remember when I started reading these books like 7 or 8 years ago, because I literally looked up in Audible what the longest book they had was, and the longest was the Bible, and the second longest was the first book of the Stormlight Archive. And the first book I really liked, and I could not finish this one, and I think I've fallen off, and I'm done with this guy. I liked the first book because it really set up like a concrete world, and it was like politics heavy. You know, it was like the politics of war, and like had an ending that was concrete and also kind of set up, because it's supposed to be 10 books total. And each book is like approaching now 500,000 words each. Like he needs like a long plot. And so he set up, he had established like kind of the couple of warring factions that came to collide in the first book. He resolves that. And then sets up that there's a bigger bad guy out there that's like, and kind of starts ramping up for the big arc that's going to take, I thought, 10 books. But now in the beginning of the fourth book, the guy who is supposed to be the big bad guy is now completely powerless. And it turns out he was just possibly my least favorite trope in fantasy books, I think. Like he was just the proxy of some kind of faceless god. And it turns out that this war that humans have been having is really just a proxy war between two gods. Hmm. And so you can't really ascribe any kind of human motivation to it, because who gives a fuck?
Right.
Because it's just fucking gods. So it's like really becomes meaningless for me. But then also, I think what I think would be more interesting for you guys, he did one of the more insane, I think, things to do for this guy. I mean, I talked to a friend of mine who's read all these books, and he really liked it. Some people really like this shit, but I think it's absolutely batshit. So these books, like I said, are approaching 500,000 words each. I have read well over 1,000,000 words in this series. And one of the reasons I like it is because the audiobooks, like, I can kind of tune it out. He goes at a pretty slow pace. And so what he has started doing is putting in these oblique references to other books of his that are not in the series. So it's like, oh, wow, characters from other books are now in this book because it's like all supposed to be all one big universe. But so he's doing shit where one paragraph, maybe 50 words out of 400,000 will be an oblique reference to a different book, to a character. And you're supposed to like be keeping track of that and like figure it out. And like, oh, that's fucking Caden from this other book. And it just doesn't, I mean, that blows my fucking mind. I can't even imagine, like, you don't need 400,000 words to tell the story. Like, he goes at such a slow pace that it's like, you could cut off a lot of that.
Right. But do you think that someone who is really invested in those books would feel very satisfied with that reference, or is that just padding?
I can't imagine how many people picked up on it and didn't just read it in like the subreddit and okay. I doubt many people actually figured it out for themselves. I think it was like kind of a community thing where it's like, oh, okay, there are these references in this book, and now like, so now they're saying that if you haven't read all of his other books, you're probably not going to understand all of this book. And it's like, right. Well, fuck.
Yeah, great. That's the point then.
So I read about a quarter of it over 6 weeks.
Whoa.
And finally I was like, I have to give up because I'm not reading anything else. In the 2 weeks since I gave up, I've read 4.5 other books. <It's> like, you know, when you have to take,
so you went through a slutty phase, you ended a bad relationship,
yeah,
and then bounced back with a slutty phase.
Yeah, yeah, huge slut. I was gonna compare it to shit, but I like that metaphor better. You really blocked up, and then finally,
why not keep the theme going?
Yeah.
Shit filled episode so far.
So I don't know, it's a shame because I thought this guy, what his best quality is that he writes really satisfying endings, and like, I don't know, I can't hang around for another 300,000 words to get to it, even if it's a good ending.
You just listen to the ending then.
Yeah, just read it.
Just skip ahead and be like,
read,
oh,
a summary.
Cool, this was the 4th of 10, you said?
Yeah, crazy, right? Yeah, it's like his whole life. It's like the rest of his life's project, you know?
Yeah.
So like by the time he's done, it'll be at least 5,000,000 words?
Around there, between 4 and 5 million. The guy writes so much. I mean, it's insane.
Wait, is that Brandon Sanderson?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like calling your shot like that with novels is different. Like, so in comics, you know, a comic comes out, it's like a 12-issue series, and the writers write to that 12-issue length typically, right? And sometimes they don't do that, obviously, but like that's like, that can be a thing. But I feel like with novels, to like start, be like, this is gonna be a 10 novel series, and start, and especially if they're really long like that, and just like start hacking away at it, God, I feel like it'd be so tempting to get to 6 and be like, you know what,
yeah,
I've got nothing left.
Yeah.
3 million, and they all die.
Yeah, yeah. This guy could definitely stand to have an editor just go in with an axe and like chop, yeah, out whole characters from like some of these books. And like a lot of his characters just have the same arc over and over. And it's like, okay, I get it. This guy has PTSD. I get it. Right. Oh yeah, he's gonna get really sad, and then he's gonna fucking level up his power, and he's gonna get like back to fucking kicking ass again. And it's like, I don't care the third time. Ugh.
You can make a t-shirt that says this guy has PTSD. I get it.
With an arrow pointing up.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's what happened to George R.R. Martin to some extent. Like, he just, like, I mean, I haven't read those books, I don't know. But it seems like there's some dude who's just like, I don't know, I got kind of sick of it, and then...
Uh-huh.
I think that dude wrote himself in a corner where he knows there's no way he can write a last book that everyone likes.
I see.
Well, I mean, he's already got the plot.
I bet
the plot's out there, so...
Yeah, I guess, like, the movie or the TV show finished it
for him. Is he committed to sticking to the TV show? Who knows? Especially after the TV show was hated so much. I almost feel like he's, like, certain to do it. I bet you that book's written. He's just going to sit on it and release it when he dies. Like, it's not like he's hurting for money.
He's not even at that book, though. He hasn't finished the book before the last book.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Is that true? That's funny. Yeah. I don't care. I read the first one of his books and I hated it.
Yeah. I don't know. What's worse, for the book to never come out or for the book to come out like this series? For this, I mean, this guy cranks out 400,000 word book every other year and they just getting worse.
I think there's something to the mystique of like the book never coming out. I think that we've seen, I'm trying to think of examples right now, top of my head, and they're not coming, but I feel like we had examples from other media, like movies and stuff.
The dragon tattoo guy ended up being, he died before it was done, didn't his like nephew or something write those?
Yeah, final books? That's bad too. But I'm thinking like a creator who comes back to a property that kind of abandoned for, and is like, oh, I never got to make like the third whatever sequel this.
Handmaid's Tale 2.
Yeah, right? Or To Kill Ghost of the Watchmen is a good example of that, where it's like not exactly the same thing because it was a different situation, but still it's like
that was a weird elder abuse situation.
Yeah, people like wanting more of this thing and then getting it being like, oh, I guess I should have been happy with what I had in the first place.
Yeah,
like when Futurama was canceled and came back and it sucked and I was like, oh, this is not funny anymore. It was funny the first time.
Or the Star Wars prequels.
Yeah, there's some examples. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A couple things to mention here on my end. So one book I got for Christmas is a short story collection called The Awkward Black Man by Walter Mosley. You guys heard that name or know Walter Mosley?
Heard the name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Super prolific. His most famous character is the Easy Rollins, like detective character kind of thing.
Yeah.
I just started it, so I haven't read too much, but the first story was good. I'm interested to see how it progresses. The style is very interesting. It's a very, what I would call like plain style. Not in a bad way, but just like straightforward. But there is some evocative stuff that I'll dig into when I have more to say about it. But so far, enjoying it. And then a quick comics roundup tied to recent discussions in this podcast. A couple different threads tied together. So Tom King, the writer of Mr. Miracle that we discussed before, is issue 4 came out this week of a new Rorschach series from DC Comics. So an interesting intersection of recent interest in the podcast.
Dear.
Rorschach from Watchmen?
From Watchmen. Artist is Jorge Fornes, who is amazing. I first heard of him when he did an issue of Tom King's Batman run. And I was like, who the fuck is this guy? He's so good. His art looks a lot, or has a distinct David Mazzucchelli feel, who was the artist on Batman Year One, and that's some of the best comic art of all time. He's not Mazzucchelli, but it's the right vibe, and it feels really good. I love his stuff. The story so far is really interesting. I'm curious to see where it goes. It's not quite a sequel to Watchmen. It does seem to be taking some stuff from the TV show. Like there's a couple references to Oklahoma in here, which is a big part of the Watchmen series, or the television series. But it's someone dressed like Rorschach and a woman dressed like a Annie Oakley style cowgirl tried to assassinate a presidential candidate and were killed. And this detective, who we don't know who the detective is really, is trying to figure out like what happened and kind of goes back through and is doing this investigation. Every issue is basically kind of like a short story of someone's life. And King is bringing a lot into it. It's interesting to think about it in terms of what Nico mentioned about Mr. Miracle feeling light compared to Watchmen feeling dense. This feels like, this is definitely much more dense than Mr. Miracle is. But you can still tell that King is doing something different than Alan Moore is doing. But it's not bad. I actually really enjoy it. And I'm curious to see what ends up happening. You know, this could be, doing a Rorschach miniseries is dicey no matter what, just like taking that character and fucking with it. But so far it's been really intriguing. I'm looking forward to more. Another Tom King book that we talked about before briefly is Strange Adventures, which is drawn by Mitch Gerrits, his Mr. Miracle partner, and Evan Doc Shaner, doing sort of alternating stories. I had read, I think, issues 1 and 2 last time I talked about it, and I was interested in it, but I was not sure where it was going. It's now in issue 7 or 8, and it's great. I'm really enjoying it. It's a good mystery. It really requires a lot of prior knowledge of DC Comics. I wouldn't recommend it to any of my personal pals necessarily, because it leans a bit heavily on stuff like that, whereas Mr. Miracle didn't in certain ways. But definitely cool, and there's some really good art stuff going on in that book as well. One more Tom King comic is, he has a Batman Catwoman book out, which is also quite good, but the lesser of the three that I'm reading right now for sure. What I like about it though is it's set in the continuity of the Batman animated series movie Mask of the Phantasm, which is one of my favorites, and so I pulled out that to watch again recently, and I just fucking love that movie. It's so good. And so it's exciting to have a comic sort of set in that universe. Listeners, that's what we're reading. What about you? What are you checking out as you're recovering from your coronavirus infection or not? Or while you're pooping like Dave is? Or while you're going through a slutty phase like Nico? Let's hear about it. Twitter at YakBabies. And of course, email us at YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com with all those details and insights. You can also check out our second podcast, our secret blackmail cast called Yuck Babies, on Patreon.com/YakBabies for $1 a month. You can get access to that podcast. It's really good. There's lots of fun stuff there. There's Brother Bros. We're breaking down the hot issues of the day. There's drunk casts and drafts and games and emies and all sorts of stuff there. check that out for more Yak content. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all the loyal listeners, and especially their patrons both past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, Roger, Kathleen, Bailey, and William Howard Taft.